When I work with you, my goal is to not buy one property, make that commission, and then say, you know, see you later. I want to make a really good buy on the first property. That way I'm working with you every day for the next couple of years and really helping you build a portfolio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Spencer Sutton, and I've got, he's not a rookie anymore. He's a veteran of the podcast.
It only takes three times to be a veteran.
Well,
I guess four. I don't know.
You're going to be the host before you know it. Hunter, welcome back to the show.
If Spencer has his way. Yes, thanks, Spencer. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, I'm excited about today. We're sitting in my office, and we've got a special guest with us. We have another Evernester with us. And Clay Collins, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, appreciate you guys having me on, I guess. Hunter really is a veteran. He's asking the guests to come on now. Hunter came in my office and begged me to come on the podcast, so I figured I'd make an appearance. So appreciate y'all having me here.
Hey, listen, I'll tell you right now, we have four podcasts going, and you're always thinking about who can you have on that's interesting, who can you have on to give a different perspective, and thanks for asking Clay to come on.
Yeah, I mean, it made total sense. Clay and I work very closely together on almost a daily basis. We're on the phone, we're texting, we're working with common clients. We meet at least once a week for breakfast or lunch just to kind of catch up on what we have going on. And he's been an absolute resource to me and my business and obviously Evernest as a whole. So excited to have you.
Awesome. Well, just so everybody knows, Clay works in the brokerage division of our company. And so we thought it'd be great to bring you on, Clay, because you're seeing, like, you are boots on the ground, seeing, talking to investors every day. And what I love about your business is you're dealing with real estate rookies, right? People who are going from zero to one. You're also dealing with more experienced or seasoned real estate investors who are building the portfolio. And then you also have dealt with institutional clients. So talk a little bit about just kind of your client base.
Right. So I've been with Evernest for about a year now. And when I came on, the market was very hot. We didn't have to really search for deals like we are now. They were just everywhere and there was abundance of them. So when I first started, worked with some institutions and deals were flowing. You know, we could just find them in pretty much every neighborhood, no matter what your strategy was. Institutions were very heavy. As the markets kind of shifted, sellers were getting peak pricing for a couple months. Now we're in a little bit more of the retail space where these newer investors, some rookie investors, are really being able to find deals. Institutions are slowing down a little bit. Mm-hmm. We're having to search a little bit more, but these rookie investors who have been sitting on the sidelines waiting for the right deal to pop up have become a little tired of waiting and they're ready to pull the trigger now. So being able to get a lot of rookie investors in this market.
What I think is interesting is that probably, you know, for the past couple of years until recently, until the market shifted, for the rookie investor, it's been very difficult for you to buy houses, I would imagine, just because of the demand, especially in markets like Birmingham, just because the demand from the institutions is so great. They know what they're looking for and they pull the trigger. They don't wait. They don't have to think about it. They're not analyzing it near as much. They know their buy box. And so they're very dialed in, which kind of leaves our, you know, newer investors going, well, I really would have liked that house, but anyway, so what you're seeing is a shift in the market. Now, we all know that the institutions have slowed way down. Now we're seeing the ability to find deals, make lower offers probably mm-hmm. to compensate for the higher interest rates.
Yeah, so for a little bit, a lot of retail investors, I feel like we're in the stage of analysis paralysis a little bit. Interest rates were rising. They weren't sure what was going to happen. Institutions were still coming in strong. Institutions, for a while, were taking up all the deals on the market. Because these retail investors, they listen to a couple podcasts and they think they can come in, offer a little bit below list. Well, when the market was hot, these institutions were still being able to offer, you know, $10,000 cash offers above list. So it was really hard for these retail buyers to actually get a foot in the door. Now we're starting to see, like you said, the institutionals starting to pull off the gas a little bit, starting to see some negotiations go on between these retail investors who were watching the interest rates, you know, continue to rise. It's hard to find a deal. Well, now, a deal might be listed at $180,000. It might not work for these, you know, rookie investors at $180,000, but the deal might work at $160,000 or it might work at $150,000. So we're able to see those negotiations take place. We're able to come in a little bit lower and actually have a chance to win the deal. So that's definitely changed the tides a little bit for these newer investors.
So tell me about that. You're talking about some different ways. It sounds like it's just a different approach. And I know you've had experience with kind of folks of all different types of experience level. So how does that differ between, you know, rookies and the institutional and even like kind of the midway point? Like what is your strategy with working with each of those clients?
So institutional, it's a little bit more hands off. They know exactly what numbers they're looking for. They know their cash on cash return. If a deal is at 6% cash on cash return and they're looking for 8%, they're not going to pull the trigger. Well, these retail investors, you need to maybe hold their hand a little bit more, kind of walk them through the process. A lot of them, it's going to be their first property to ever buy. So really just got to show them, one, the deals that are out there. And when analyzing deals, you want to look at the price that it's listed on the MLS, but you don't want to fall in love with that. Just because a property is listed at that price does not mean it's going to sell for that price, especially in this market. So when showing them these deals, when you analyze it, it might not work right away, but that's when you play around with the numbers, lower the purchase price a little bit, maybe look at creative ways to finance it, such as buying a point down or even coming in with cash if you have that. Will, you know, definitely up that cash flow if that's what you're looking for as an investor. So looking at different items or ways to analyze the deal is stuff that you have to be creative as a retail investor and just kind of look for that diamond in the rough.
I've had a lot of folks reach out to me, retail buyers as well. And we know institutions often have the cash and that way they're able to close on the deal quickly, you know, or have a very strong offer at least coming in, which makes them more competitive. For retail buyers, a lot of their concerns are, if I'm financing the deal, am I just not competitive? Can you speak to that at all?
I wouldn't say that at all, because a lot of these institutional, they feel that they have cash and they feel that their offer is better. But now that the market shifted, they're coming in way below list. Well, if you're financing a deal, you can make it work for a little bit of a higher price. And also, you know, this is going to be one of your first deals. You're going to come after it a little bit stronger than these institutionals are. Institutional buyers, they can kind of pass on a deal and wait around because they've already built that massive portfolio. These new retail buyers, the longer you sit on the sideline, the more deals you're going to miss out on.
Awesome.
Yeah. So also in this environment, you know, what I've been telling investors is, listen, just because you see a deal, kind of like what you're saying, Clay, is like you can make an offer that makes sense to you. And to that end, working with an investor-friendly real estate agent is much different than working with a retail agent. And so what I'm telling investors is get with one of our team, like get with you, Clay, and then work with those numbers. We have a calculator, and I'm guessing you use that calculator, which is like this analyzer.
Every single day, I use that a little bit more than I need to.
Listen, Clay helped me buy a house. So back in, was it May? I think April.
Tom,
you know, I told him, we're at the point we're ready to get another one under the belt. And we basically went through this process, narrowed it down. And look, I'm a licensed agent, but
yeah.
You know, I'm not in it every day. I'm a licensed agent because I signed property management agreements and it helps me, you know, on that end. But Clay's the expert. So I'm like, Clay, I need your help. And he was sending me deals almost every day. I had it basically set up to get stuff that was within my buy box.
Right.
And eventually we found this one. And as soon as I said, yeah, I like that one, let's analyze it. I mean, within an hour, he had a spreadsheet to me complete with cash flow projections and, you know, charts and projections for the rehab as well. Even.
Right.
And that was included into it.
That's right.
Because we knew it was going to need some work. It had a renter in place. I mean, all these little variables he can change and it spit out, hey, this is what it's going to look like. It helped me really make a quick and informed decision, which ultimately turned out to be a great rental.
Yeah, so definitely got lucky on that one. That was right at the 1% rule. So didn't have to play at the numbers too much there. But now as the market shifted a little bit, it's a little bit harder to find that 1% rule. So right away when we analyze the deal, they might not make sense. But that's why we can play around with this spreadsheet, kind of see which offer we need to come in at, how much rehab makes sense. And then we can make an informed decision and really see those numbers all the way up to year 30 on this spreadsheet. So especially if you're doing a buy and hold, you will be able to see far into the future of what your financials will look like.
So if you're an investor and you're listening to this, which I'm guessing you are an investor listening to this, go and download that. We have that calculator available on our website. You can go to our investor tab. You will see it in there. I think you can also, the direct link is evernest.co/calculator, I want to say, but it's very comprehensive. And like you said, you use it every day. And to me, it's all about making the offer, right? Mm-hmm. So you make an offer that makes sense for you. Just because you see something on like MLS or you see some off-market deal saying this is the price, you don't have to offer that. I used to make, when I was buying houses, I would make every month, we'd probably make 30 offers on houses and we'd get about four accepted, mm-hmm. four or five accepted. We were offering deeply discounted offers on these houses, and it all depends on the underlying motivation of the seller. Like some people have to unload it and they want to unload it. And so if you come in $10, $20, $30,000 below the list, you don't ever know what somebody's motivation is.
Right. You never know what the seller's circumstances are, how desperate they are to sell. I tell all my investors this, putting in an offer doesn't lock you in. It just gets us in the front door. So even if we see something during inspection we don't like, we can always back out, save your earnest money. It's not the biggest deal in the world. I think a lot of newer investors, they see one property, they fall in love with it, they gotta have it. They'll even outprice themselves sometimes on the offer. But you should never fall in love with the property. You should, if the numbers make sense, make that offer, but always know that when you write up that offer, you're probably not even going to win the offer most of the time in this market. So put in more offers than you think, and you'll find that right deal when it comes about.
That's right.
On average, how many offers are you putting in for a client?
Depends. Some clients like to get a very discounted property, and you're putting in, you know, say 10 offers to win that one deal. But that's the deal that's going to be the really good one. The investors that fall in love with the property will come in at list and win their first deal. But sometimes those are the investors that have to sit on the sidelines for a little bit longer because the financials might not have made sense right off the bat. And now they haven't gotten stuck with, per se, a bad property, but it's harder to get right back into the game because they maybe outpriced themselves a little bit too much.
Well, I think that's one of the key differences that you just kind of brought up is between an investor-focused agent or an investor-friendly agent. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people will use this term. It's very loose, but I mean, I think there's a key difference between a truly investor-friendly agent and a retail or first-time home buyer, someone that's listing, doing open houses. I mean, there's just a complete difference. And one of those is how many offers you're putting in. I mean, it's tireless. Most of your work is behind a computer screen, putting in offers and working in spreadsheets.
100%. Most of the time we're behind a computer as an investor agent because we're looking at the financials. When I work with you, my goal is to not buy one property, make that commission, and then say, you know, see you later. I want to make a really good buy on the first property. That way I'm working with you every day for the next couple of years and really helping you build a portfolio. So I think that's where the main difference comes in between investor agents and, you know, regular residential agents. We're not going for the one sale. We're going to help you out and really make this a partnership for years to come.
I think this is a really important aspect to talk about because we always say around here, you date your real estate agent, but you marry your property manager because your property manager is with you long term. Your typical real estate agent is like, hey, there's no commitment there, right? But we have to live with those decisions. The property managers have to live with the decisions that an owner makes, an investor makes with that agent. And sometimes they don't really match up. Is what we've seen in the past, like before we had brokerage, so before we had Clay on our team helping investors, we were, you know, we would just onboard houses from other agents that were selling things, taking that commission mm-hmm. and walking away and saying, hey, look what I did. I sold this property. Now, Evernest, go have fun managing this load of crap. And it's always very rough. And so I just love how we've married the brokerage and the real, like the property management, which is why I love how you and Hunter work so closely together. As a matter of fact, I just interviewed an investor out of Manhattan, and he bought his first property through us. And as soon as he bought it, he was passed off to Hunter. And Hunter was like, and he was blown away by that. He talked about it. He's like, I didn't know this was kind of what y'all did. It introduced me to the property management side of it. It was really great, just kind of seamless. So talk a little bit about how the two of you work together to help these investors succeed.
So that's kind of one of my very first conversations I have with my investors is because that just eliminates a huge hiccup for us. The fact that once I have a property under contract, Hunter is already in the loop. Hunter knows that this property is going to be onboarded soon. He's going to need to have the conversation with an investor. If you're working with another brokerage, you know, say just a regular residential brokerage, they don't really do a lot of investing. They don't have a connection to a property management group. That house will probably be closed, and then you're going to have to start looking for a property manager. by the time we're closed, we already have a management agreement signed and we're looking to start placing a tenant for you. Granted, it doesn't need any rehab. So being able to have no drop balls, also have Hunter be able to connect you with our renovation team, and really just let the property go through a smooth process all the way from putting in the offer to the closing date to having a tenant put in place. It's all staying with the same team. So there's no drop balls, a lot of communication going on back and forth. And Hunter does a great job kind of connecting the renovation, brokerage, and management all together. So really couldn't do it without Hunter here for sure.
Well, you're right. It's a team effort. Even back to the analysis of the product, we talked about modifying these spreadsheets and getting the right information. I mean, your analysis is only good as the spreadsheet's only as good as the data you put
That's
in,
right.
right? So where do you get rent comps? And Clay pulls plenty of rent reports. So he knows these areas well, but often he'll consult me and we talk together about it. I might even get my PM team involved. We talk about the areas. Hey, he'll ask me, hey, is this an area that we're willing to manage? Because the reality is, if Clay's going to sell you a property that we won't manage, you know, a load of crap, that's our problem that we're going to have to deal with anyway.
Right.
So that's don't really want it.
We want to set the right expectations.
That's right.
That's right.
And our communication, our collaboration on the front end really helps to do that. All the way to closing. I mean, you know, it's my favorite deal when I know that it's within our brokerage or one of our consistent partners, you know, out in the field. You know, shout out like Jeremy Galloway. He's one that he knows what to expect. Clay knows what to expect. If we're closing a deal with these guys, like if it's an occupied property, we're going to have the lease, the ledger, the keys, the security deposit all lined up before we close. Yeah. And this is the kind of stuff that can take weeks to rectify or clean up after closing if you don't already have a foothold on it. So it's very, very important. It's going to help you get on the market or up onboarded a lot quicker. And that's all due to, you know, Clay and I working together.
It definitely helps our investors also make informed decisions on their property, because when they ask me if this property will actually rent for the rent comps I'm pulling, sometimes I'm able to ask Hunter, do we actually have properties in this area that we currently manage rent reports? Because just because what you're pulling online, it may not be correct. And other agents or other property management groups might not be connected to you and say, you know, yes, this property will rent for $1,000 a month. Well, it's a 2-bedroom, 1-bath in West End. It's probably not going to rent for $1,000 a month. We can actually pull comps of stuff that's in Evernest portfolio and give you an accurate, you know, answer on that property.
Yeah. And plus taking the market into consideration, right? So there's a big difference between if you were asking somebody in April 2020 what it rented for versus what it's going to rent for versus April 2022, right? So we've seen the market shift. We know the Birmingham market. This is really interesting because I was just interviewing a surgeon who's now an investor. He's got 25 properties, I think, and we were talking his first deal. He lived in Los Angeles. He's now moved to Memphis, but his first deal was in Birmingham, and it wasn't with us. It was with a different company. It was a turnkey company. And he said it was his biggest letdown of a deal, like his biggest frustration, the only deal where he was like, this is a dud. And it was really the disconnect between the turnkey salespeople and renting the property. Like there was a huge disconnect what they said it could rent for versus what it ultimately rented for. Like, right? So when you're running your spreadsheet and you have to drop the price $150 to $200 a month, that's a pretty big swing. And that was what he was saying was his biggest frustration and ultimately led to him selling that property.
Well, in that system, I think, unfortunately, there's just some perverse incentives that kind of come into place, right? Like a true turnkey company is going to be buying the property, rehabbing it themselves, selling it, and part of their revenue or profit is coming from that sale on the home.
That's right.
They're doing that, the value add. It's great for investors who just want to be very hands-off. I think it's much, much harder to find a deal, a turnkey deal that works. You're going to be taking a little off your cash flow, of course, nowadays. You know, when you have that incentive to try to maximize the return on the flip, then you're also trying to get it off the market to somebody. You almost kind of want to project on the higher end of the range.
You definitely are like, hey, I feel confident we can get $1,200 a month.
Yeah.
But then when you get $1,000, you're like, well, you know.
Whereas if you're working with Clay and I, if there's I always like to provide a range because it's true. Seasonality plays a part, price. Yep. You know, if we market it right now versus 3 months, what other homes in that neighborhood are you going to be competing with? There's always a range. So if we say something like $1,000 to $1,100, you know, we want to try to keep that range tight. I always say underwrite for the smaller amount. Mm-hmm. If the deal works at the lower amount of that range, then
we can start on the higher end.
Yeah.
Just knowing, hey, we're going to watch this very closely. We're going to watch applications. We're going to watch activity in the property to see is like, is something wrong with the property or the price? And then we'll adjust accordingly.
And that's why I think working with also Evernest is a benefit to our investors, because we're never going to try and sell you on a deal, just trying to make that commission amount, trying to put the property into our management. I'm a very conservative person, so I'd rather under promise and over deliver. So if these turnkey providers are coming back to you saying a property went rent for $1,200, more accurate, it's probably, you know, $1,150, I'll probably tell you $1,000 a month. That way, if we do get someone in there for $1,200, you're going to be ecstatic and it's going to be a 10 times better deal than you previously thought, which is always what I want my investors to think. I wanted them to think it's a better deal than they realized and not, oh, wow, what mistake did I just make?
That's right, because you're looking for a relationship where you're going to continue to serve them, right? You're going to continue to sell them properties. Mm-hmm. 100% agree with that. What else are we going to talk about? Are we going to talk about areas of town? Did we mention that?
Yeah, I mean, for any rookie investor or even the more experienced folks, I mean, the market shifts and changes. So I think a great question to end on is, you know, what areas are you liking right now? Where are people finding the best deals? And you can even talk about the different neighborhood classes or different strategies if you like.
Yeah. So as the market shifted, I've started to see a lot more opportunities in lower priced homes, stuff around the 80 to 100K mark. That way you can still get a good cash on cash return. Those properties are still renting for around the 1% rule. So some main areas that I like to stay in are the Huffman Roebuck area is probably my favorite place to invest right now. Still a good chance for appreciation. The sellers don't want absurd amounts for the property. They're being pretty reasonable, and there's really great rental demand in that area. Another area I like as well right now is the Hueytown area. Mm. Pretty similar there. Can find homes for, you know, 75 to 95,000, maybe some turnkey deals around the 110 mark. But again, really high rental demand there. Not going to be a struggle to get someone in there. Also going to have, you know, some blue collar workers, people that are going to be staying in your property for a long period of time, which, you know, in turn is making you not have to turn the property as much, save some capital, put that in your pocket and be able to reinvest that. So those are my two main areas right now. I still have a close eye on East Lake as well, but appreciation kind of shot up there and rental appreciation did not as much. For Hunter, for instance, that property we were able to find for him, you know, it was priced at about 80K. We had a tenant in there for about 800. That same property right now is probably selling for, you know, 110, 115. With a tenant in there for about 850 or 900.
Do you think that's going to solve? Do you think the market is going to soften where people are going to be taking less for these properties? I mean, I would just imagine they're not getting as many offers if they're trying to sell it.
So I'm seeing properties are sitting on the market for a lot longer right now. Oh. Sellers are still kind of stubborn, I guess.
They don't want to leave 2021, do they?
I think a lot of them who are selling right now wish they sold back in May. So trying to get peak pricing. What I think we're seeing is you won't see prices change as much as we think. You won't see a property that's priced right now at 120 be priced for 100K here in the next couple months. But a property that's priced at 120 right now, you know, a couple months ago was selling for 125, 130.
Yeah.
I think these properties are going to start selling for a lot less, going to see a lot more negotiations between agents. For a while there back in May, you know, these agents were getting 30 plus offers in. You weren't even hearing back for 2 weeks. So now you're starting to, you know, get that email back.
Hey, you're still interested in this property?
Oh, right. Maybe a counter there. So I wouldn't expect prices to change as much, but maybe expect the process to change a little bit, being able to offer a little bit less and still have a chance to win that deal.
Yeah.
Kind of what we were talking about earlier when analyzing these spread, you know, instead of looking at the deal priced at 120, look at it priced at 100. I think that's where the change is going to come.
And so maybe you catch some of those desperate sellers and folks that need, you know, have a little bit of urgency to it.
Put in the 10 offers, find the one that really needs to get out
that's
of this
right.
property
that's
and
right.
needs the capital back.
Motivation. It's all about motivation. It's all about seller motivation. If the people are stubborn and they don't really have a lot of motivation, then they're just going to stick there. I think that's some interesting insight. I've got a buddy who's turning some of his East Lake properties into Airbnbs. He's got 6 or 7 now, and most of them are in East Lake. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's
also... And they're staying filled up.
Right. That's a direction that could come, especially in some of those areas such as Druid Hills, Fountain Heights, as Birmingham starts to grow a little bit more north, possibly this $50 million amphitheater coming in. It could give an opportunity to some Airbnbs in that neighborhood, people wanting to stay very close to downtown and maybe for pretty cheap, but...
Well, and that Uptown Star is already happening. There's been a lot of buzz about the amphitheater, and I think it seems very positive, like it's moving forward, but the Uptown Star is happening, and this is this whole mixed-use...
What's the Uptown Star? I don't even know what that is.
Big mixed-use development up in Uptown, so like past the stadium, the new stadium.
Yep.
So, you know, just last year, they opened up a protective stadium, which is now the site of all the UAB games. It was the site of a bunch of the World Games events, opening and closing ceremonies. I mean, but, you know, who knows? Maybe an NFL team will play there one day. I think that's like a dream for...
Fingers crossed.
Mayor Woodfin.
Yeah.
But they took the old Caraway Hospital. Mm-hmm. It was just in terrible shape. Eyesore, super ugly, kind of terrifying, really, driving past it. And they are knocking it down and building like a mixed-use retail living. I think there's going to be even some affordable living over there, but I mean, it's right there by
Finley Boulevard and all that area.
Across from Norwood and everything. So they were talking about, I mean, that's already started, and then they just proposed and are moving forward with the financing. I think they got preliminary financing approved for a $50 million amphitheater.
So that definitely gives opportunities to the north side of town that some people have been neglecting for many years. So maybe this will get a little bit more movement towards there, and we can see, you know, what possibilities open up, whether it is buy and holds or maybe some Airbnbs in the future.
That's your speculative play.
So are they shutting my Oak Mountain amphitheater down? I've heard talk about that.
Yes. So that's what that's what the opposition is afraid of, right? The Oak Mountain amphitheater, and it creates competition for the Orion amphitheater in Huntsville.
Right.
Which was a really big deal and has brought, I mean, they had
Dave Matthews there.
Yeah. The whole story behind that, I mean, I think you find an article on it or something. I won't go into it now, but the way they built that was for the artists. They actually thought about it from the artist's perspective, like driving the tour bus in, where they're going to park, where they're going to set up the green room. Then they moved to the stage, the sound, the production for the artist.
Right.
Then they thought about the crowd, which in competing with Nashville and Memphis and Atlanta and Birmingham, you know, cities that are influential for music, they said we need to do something for the artists to attract them here. And they've had some really big players there.
And Huntsville's definitely seen the growth. So hopefully Birmingham can be next there once we get something big into play.
That's right. My best concert I ever saw at Oak Mountain Amphitheater was Stone Temple Pilots. Y'all are too young to even know who that is, aren't you?
I was about to say, I think that
I might
be.
I know who it is. I've never seen him.
I saw the Stone Temple Pilots there among other people. But, well, this has been good. Clay, I love Hueytown. Like that, and I think we've talked about Hueytown before here. Like, it's been because it's not a heavy, heavy rental market, right? You still have a lot of home ownership in the area. So if you can find a deal, if you're listening to this, and you want to get in touch with Clay, call Clay. You want to wear him out about finding you a place in Hueytown, you'll do well over there. I just like it. I like Hueytown and then Pleasant Grove right there.
100%. Those are two really good areas. A little bit farther away from downtown than typical, you know, East Lake or Huffman Roebuck, but that's why you're able to find some good deals there right now.
Right.
I think it was overlooked for a little while, but now you're able to find some, you know, really good, well-priced deals around that 100K mark, good C-class properties there. So if you're interested in getting in touch there, would 100% be able to help you find some deals.
So how can they get in touch with you?
We took people there for our investor tour.
Oh, you did take them there? Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good place.
We're planning another one.
Yeah.
Quick question before we close out, if it's okay. One more bonus topic here. I get a lot of folks that call interested in, you mentioned earlier, the 80 to 100,000 range. Now look, there's no secret. You can still buy homes in Birmingham for around 50 or 60,000. Stuff is listed in there. Why not the 50, 60,000 range?
Yeah, so I've got a bunch of reasons, but go ahead, Clay.
Spencer might have some real world experience. For those properties, they might look great on paper, but when you get into them, especially if they're needing a rehab, there's usually an underlying issue that the listing agent does not want to disclose, or they're hoping you find that during the inspection. So usually the renovations are going to be pretty expensive there. You're going to be all in probably another, you know, another 50. You're going to be all in at about 100K. And then the cash flow in those markets, it looks good. But then, as I think you were talking about on another podcast, Spencer, once you see that cash flow, you know, it's a couple, maybe a couple hundred a month. Well, those properties are going to be in lower income areas. Mm-hmm. Tenants might not treat them as good as other areas, but then that cash flow is going to be needed for probably, you know, a broken HVAC, a leak in the ceiling that you didn't know about for a long time. And then that cash flow is gone. So it can make sense in that area. I have investors that buy there, but sometimes it looks a little bit better on paper than it actually does once you own that property. Not saying not to go invest there. I have one under contract right now, $50,000 range. We got $35,000 renovation, but we definitely need to get an inspector in there and see what, you know, the full story is. So there's definitely still deals to be found in that price range, but I tell my investor, just know the pros, know the cons, and be, you know, aware of what you're getting into there.
That's great perspective.
I think going in with your eyes wide open into those projects, because typically the house is going to be older, so it's going to have more routine, like you're going to have more maintenance. Mm-hmm. So you need to, like when you're working your spreadsheet, account for that. You're right. Especially if you're having a Section 8 resident, they're going to live in the house more. They're going to flush more toilets, flip more light switches. And so, yeah, I've definitely done that. And I've seen people be successful. There are several investors that I knew back in the day that had over 100 properties in those types of areas. Like one of them was Wylam. This guy had over 100 properties in Wylam. And that's a place I would never tell an investor to, you know, to buy a property. But he made it work, but he lived here. And like, mm-hmm. this is all he did. And so, and he also did some things that probably were not right. Like when a tenant didn't pay, he'd go and take the front door off the house. He would climb on the roof and shove a orange down the ventilation. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, we don't do that.
As I said, pros and cons to that area, just be aware. But I tell all my investors this as well, people that want to buy in that area, because they hear about Birmingham low price properties. Yeah. They see these online. The numbers make sense. But really, you know, with those properties, it's not going to be a one and done. If you're planning to buy in those areas, you need to plan to buy a lot.
Multiple. 100. That's right.
That way you can accumulate the wealth that you're looking for. Might be a little bit easier, a little bit more hands off if you're going into C-class areas. But hey, that $50,000 range, if you want to be a little bit more hands on, you can get some really good cash flow there if you accumulate a lot of them.
Yeah.
So if people are listening and they want to get in touch with you, how do you want them to reach out to you?
You can reach out to me via email. It's ccollins@evernest.co, or you can feel free to give me a call on my cell phone, 205-563-3054. I'm open all time, so feel free to shoot me a text or shoot me a call, and we can definitely get in touch and talk over some rental properties and hopefully, you know, build you a nice portfolio here in Birmingham.
Awesome. Clay, thanks for being here.
Thanks,
Hunter. Man. Thanks for being the host and pushing this forward and finding our guest. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It was awesome.
Hey, appreciate you guys having me on as well. It was a good time really talking through some real estate here in Birmingham.
And we'll have you back on. So we'll do this again. And then also, if people have properties, they're listening and they want to get in touch with you, Hunter, how do they need to get in touch with you?
Yes. Email htarryn@evernest.co. So htterryn@evernest.co. That's the best way. We can schedule a call. You get all my other information that way. Or you can get me on LinkedIn. Follow me on LinkedIn. I do a lot of posts and stuff for things that are going on in the Birmingham area. I love this city and it's definitely welcomed us. And so we're, you know, follow me there and get all the updates.
Also, me and Hunter are pretty big on Bigger Pockets.
Oh, yeah.
So feel free to reach out to us there as well if you have an account. If you're an investor and don't have an account on Bigger Pockets, I really urge you to hop on there, can find some good information, and can really network, connect, learn, whatever you need to do.
And last thing I'll say is we're going to be building our own community on the Evernest platform. So if you're an investor, we're going to have our own community on our website where you can go and network with agents and you can network with other investors who are really interested in certain markets. So we'll keep you updated on that. That's it. That's it for this episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor. Thanks, guys, for being here, and we'll be back next month with another episode.